taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read, we study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free, and I'm glad you could join me today. You know, every so often, somebody asks me, why are they always coming for our guns? And I always think about it, you know, who is this they, and why are they coming for our guns? Well, while there are different groups and organizations that you could say make up the they, the reasons for people coming for our guns are generally twofold, and I want to look at some news items around that. Now, what are those two reasons? Well, one, people who have an honest, if misguided, belief that if we simply remove the guns from private citizens' hands, all of the murder and mayhem would disappear. Now, there's no evidence that this would be true, and in fact, there's a lot of evidence that it wouldn't. And in fact, the very idea doesn't pass muster once you get beyond, well, say, a childish single-order reasoning. I mean, do we really think that passing laws that ban guns will suddenly disappear? Do we suddenly think that people who are already breaking the law wouldn't break the law to get guns? And if someone's already decided in their head they're willing to commit murder or other violent crimes, do you think they're really worried about a gun charge? Now, there's plenty of news going on, and every so often this team seems to come back around, that involves people that are coming for our guns. They simply ignore what the Second Amendment says and says, nope, we are coming for your guns. The latest one being from Senator Chuck Schumer, the senator from New York. He's also the majority leader in the Senate, at least at the moment. And he wants to create an interstate task force on illegal guns. Now, this task force is being spearheaded by New York Governor Kathy Hochul under the belief that it will somehow choke off crime. All right, let's stop and think about that for just a second. Let's start with the basic premise. Now, assuming that this money would be involved with interstate trafficking of guns, well, since Congress only has the power to deal with interstate commerce, it's dubious constitutionally to begin with because, yeah, they could regulate interstate commerce. But, all right, let's just back up a second. So you're going to pass laws to prevent people from illegally using guns. Let me ask you, how about those laws about illegal trafficking of drugs? How well has that worked? What about the laws against murder, rape, assault, robbery? How well have those laws dealt with the problem? And why? Answer me this question. Why do you think the problem with violence, with crime, is the inanimate object a criminal may use? See, there's the logical issues you run into. But as I read a little deeper in a couple of these articles, something very interesting showed up. See, now, again, Schumer wants to allocate $1.5 billion, with a B. He wants to put $1.5 billion into an interstate gun task force. You realize that in 2020, the ATF's entire budget was only $1.4 billion. So basically, Schumer wants to double the ATF budget. Okay. But why is he doing that? See, this all came to a head after two New York Police Department officers were shot with a stolen firearm. Now, they were shot and killed. And that said, I feel for their families. I feel for the NYPD. I know how close a relationship they had. My mother was actually an auxiliary NYPD officer, so she worked a lot with the boys in blue there. But we're basically saying that Schumer wants us to double the ATF's budget because New York has a crime problem. And notice, if I read this, these officers were shot with a stolen firearm. How is this illegal trafficking, this task force on illegal guns supposed to stop someone from stealing a firearm? It's irrational. At least if you take on face value what these politicians are saying. Now, let me ask you a simple question. How can you tell when a politician is lying? If your answer was something around the words of their lips are moving, you're pretty much right on. So my question is, since the evidence shows that these task force don't work, since evidence shows that more restrictive gun laws do not decrease crime. In fact, the cities with the highest levels of gun crime are the ones with the most strict firearm owner laws. Why are these groups of people that want to take away your guns? Now, as I said, there's one group because they have this misconception that if we just make guns illegal, they'll disappear and we won't have any gun crime. Doesn't pass the smell test, isn't rational, but that's the why they do it. But there's another group in there that I think they have a different reason for wishing to prevent otherwise law-abiding citizens from possessing firearms. Well, there's a couple quotes I believe will help us here. And the first comes from Patrick Henry. He says, "Are we at last brought to such a humiliating and debasing degradation that we cannot be trusted with arms for our own defense?" And that's a question I think we all need to ask. Have we fallen to such a point? Have we been so degraded in our position that people cannot trust their neighbors with arms for their own defense? Does my neighbor not trust that I can safely own and operate a dangerous weapon for my own defense? Do I not trust my neighbor? Even worse, does my government not trust me? Are we to the point where governments do not trust their citizens with being armed for their own defense? Or as, again, Patrick Henry put it, the humiliating and debasing degradation that we cannot be trusted with arms for our own defense. See, as much as people look and say, well, you know, we have to stop the guns, we forget little things like guns are used more often in saving life than in taking life. They are used more often to defend against crime than they are to commit a crime. If you take a look at the ATF numbers, you take a look at some of John Lott's work, you find that firearms, while not reported, are used much more often. I think, depending on the study, between 10 and 50 times more often to defend life than to take life. See, we forget that defense part of it. But I believe a better answer comes from James Madison and Federalist Papers number 46, where he says, "Beside the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached and by which the militia officers are appointed forms a barrier against the enterprises of ambition more insurmountable than any which a simple government of any form can admit of." See, there are two things, according to Mr. Madison, if I'm understanding him properly, there are really two things that help prevent the federal government from running amok, from becoming overly ambitious. One is what he refers to as subordinate governments. Now, I think that term is a bit misused, or at least misunderstood, because the states actually created the federal government. They weren't created by it. But from the standpoint of territory covered, yes, they are subordinate, they are smaller. And they are to be a defense against the ambitions of the federal government. It's part of the reason why the militia officers are appointed by the states, not by the federal government. But he said, notice he says, besides the advantage of being armed, there's an advantage to being armed. And when government tries to disarm us, we lose that advantage. So again, quoting Madison from Federalist 46, actually a little before my previous quote, he says, let a regular army fully equal to the resources of the country be formed, and let it be entirely at the devotion of the federal government. Still, it would not be going too far to say that the state governments, with the people on their side, would be able to repel the danger. In other words, no matter how large the federal government, the federal military gets, the states still have more people under arms. Look at it this way. I did a little research a while back when I was writing my book. And the regular military, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, they consist of about 1 million people under arms, somewhere around there, somewhere between 100,000 and a million. Now, the state militias, the National Guard, which could be made part of, the federal military, they can be called up by Congress, they constitute about another million or so, 1.2 million. So if we start with the premise of the federal military has about 1 million people under arms, the state governments have about 1 million people under arms, that's a pretty close fight. But consider this. Let's say the federal government nationalizes all the National Guards, all the reserves, brings everybody into the federal military. You're talking roughly 2 million people. That's a large number. That's a lot of people. And that may sound really scary until you realize that there are estimated to be over 100 million gun owners in America. 100 million. Now take this other little factoid. During the Revolutionary War, only approximately 3% of the colonists actually fought for independence, actually picked up arms and fought. So if there are 100 million gun owners and only 3% of them take up arms against a tyrannical federal government, that's 3 million against 2 million if, and that's a big if, every one of the National Guard members sides with the federal government. Now, I'm sure some of you out there are saying, but Paul, they have F-15s and they have nukes. Yeah, many of the National Guards have F-15s and nukes, but take a look at Afghanistan. 20 years we were fighting in Afghanistan. And we still got our tails kicked. Because it's not simply arms, it's the men and women who wield those arms that make a difference. Sure, in a single battle, the federal government might have a much stronger military presence. They may have a better opportunity, but we've done it before. We in 1776, we declared independence from the country with the largest military in the world, and we won. We fought them again in 1812, and we won. And we've also seen not only the U.S. military, but the Russian military and even the British military destroyed, collapsed, unable to take a region in Afghanistan because of the people. There's a reason why the Second Amendment is there. It is not there for you to go hunting and fishing. None of our framers were worried about Bambi taking your firearms. They did not want to give the government the authority to take away your firearms so you could defend yourself and your state against them. So even if you don't like guns, even if you think they're evil and scary, you should thank your neighbors that possess them. Those men and women who, whether actively or simply think about the idea of defending their nation, defending you, their neighbor, even if you're not willing to defend them in return. Why do governments want us unarmed? Why are they afraid of an armed populace? Because an armed populace can stand up against an armed government. And if there's one thing bullies cannot abide, it's the possibility that they might be stood up to. Now, okay, so even if you don't like guns, even if you don't want to carry guns or own guns or possess guns, there's a reason why, again, we have a Second Amendment and your right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There's a reason why there are laws against collecting data on guns. Now, for those of you who are not gun owners, let me give you just a little bit of a background. Any person in America who goes to a gun store to buy a firearm files what's called a 4473. It's what's called the National Instant Criminal Check System. It's called an instant background check. You fill out a form. The gun dealer contacts ATF and checks to see if you have been put on the list that says you cannot own firearms, right? Do you have a criminal record? Do you have a record of mental instability? Are there known warrants or restraining orders against you? That type of stuff. And anybody who's purchased a firearm, almost everybody who's purchased a firearm has gone through this process, because any gun dealer has to be what's called a federal firearms licensee, and any sale they make has to go through this background check. Now, this is not talking about sales between friends and neighbors and family. This is, you know, completely private sales. These are records. Now, the law says that ATF is not allowed access to these 4473s because, you know, without a warrant, right? So the idea is people were afraid, hey, this is going to become a national firearm registry. If every time you buy a firearm, they've got your name and address and what you bought and all the details. So they didn't want that. So the law states that the dealer holds on to the 4473, but the federal government is not allowed without a warrant, except for one little itty-bitty thing. See, if a firearms dealer goes out of business, all of their 4473s go to ATF. That's right, they go to the ATF. Which means as of November of last year, as of November 2021, ATF told a Texas, Representative Michael Cloud that they have a database of over 900 million, actually over 920 million gun sales. They have records from over 920 million gun sales. Now, think of it this way. The federal government knows every 920 specific million specific gun sales. They know who bought it. They know where they lived at the time. They know what they bought. They have a record. Now, how many of you are comfortable with the idea that the federal government has a record of your gun sales? Put it another way. Imagine the federal government kept a record of every time you spoke in public. They had a digitized archive set up so that they could keep track of all of that, just in case they need to go back and punish you for something that you've done. Why? Well, Rasmussen did a recent survey. And the outcome of this particular survey, well, to me at least, it was interesting. See, according to the survey, among likely voters, the U.S. is roughly evenly divided on whether or not there should be a national gun registration. Now, I'm not going to talk about how well that worked in Britain and Australia and in other countries. They're talking about having a national gun registration. But the follow-up to that was interesting. See, looking at the data, Rasmussen says that 31% of those who support a gun registry think it will lead to the confiscation of all guns. So almost a third. Almost a third of the people who say, yes, we should have a national gun registry, believe it'll end up in confiscation. Now, not all gun registries lead to confiscations, but all confiscations started with a gun registry. Why does the government want to know where all the guns are? So they can take them. I mean, historically, that's what they've been used for. Maybe not immediately, but they eventually get used for confiscation. Happened in Britain, happened in Australia, I believe it happened in Venezuela. When you need to register a constitutionally protected right, government knows where to go to take that constitutionally protected right. Now again, if you stop and think, well, no, Paul, we just want that registration so that if a gun is used in a crime, we know who owned it. Really? I mean, seriously, imagine, just pretend you are in a crime drama and you are playing the role of someone that wants to commit murder. And you say, you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to take this firearm that the government knows I own, and I'm going to use that to commit murder rather than I'll go out on the black market and I'll get one that's untraceable. I'll get one that's not at least linked to me. Maybe it was picked up in a robbery. You know, who knows? We've all seen the crime dramas. They look for guns that are not traceable. Why? Because you're always going to have untraceable guns. There's always going to be a black market. But if we allow a national registration, you make it easier for there to be a national confiscation, which is exactly what the tyrannical governments want. They do not want an armed populace because they have an unarmed populace is easier for them to control. If you've got a population that has guns, they can fight back. Granted, they may not have F-15s or A-10s, but they can fight back. They may not have rocket-propelled grenades or heat-seeking missiles, but they can fight back. And while we're talking about that, that's one of the other arguments. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to fight against F-15s? Like I said, it's been done before. But also consider this. Imagine a president. You can pick any president you want. But imagine a president that orders airstrikes on American citizens, or that orders missile strikes on American cities, or God forbid, a nuclear strike on American territory. Any shred of legitimacy would be gone. It would be the criminal act, the high crime, that would not only justify impeachment, it justifies an uprising. You see, there's one little part of the Declaration of Independence most of us forget. See, we all remember that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Most of us maybe remember that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. But we forget that it says that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them may seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. It is that the act of the tyrant, it is the act of military aggression against the American people that is the justification to say, you are destructive of our ends. We will alter this government. We will abolish this government. It's what the framers did. It's what the founders did in 1776. They said, this government has become destructive of our rights. We are going to create a new one. the very act that people say would you know, disproves the need for guns is the exact act that would initiate a second American Revolution. Now, I don't know about you. I look at the world around us, and I was talking before about, are we heading for a new Battle of Athens? A Battle of Athens where armed citizens deposed a corrupt county government. I don't want to do that. I want to deal with it before arms are the last resort, but I don't want to give up that option. So as I said, there are two reasons why they keep coming for our guns. One, a misguided belief that it's the gun that causes the crime, not the person wielding it. Or the tyrannical belief that by disarming the American people, they'll be easier to rule. They'll be easier to overrun. They'll be easier to control. I think neither of those are particularly likely, but we will only time will tell if we're right. Now, I have to head to break. Before I do, I want to remind you to please head over to constitutionstudy.com. I think one more free study coming up. Go to constitutionstudy.com/study. You can join the Constitution Study. I think there's one more free event showing up. If you register, by the way, you get access to the recording, so you can go back and listen to the previous studies. You can still participate in the Q&A through the Bill of Rights study group. But you have to head to constitutionstudy.com/study, find out more, register there, join our study. Help educate yourself and others on your rights, your liberties, how to defend them, and how to assert them. Also, if you would please, head over to healthycell.com. So this time of year, we're coming out of cold and flu season, and you know what? I haven't gotten sick. My wife hasn't gotten sick. My daughter got sick. She was only sick for a day. Now, why do we do that? Well, I believe part of it's because we try to eat a decent diet, but we take supplements to help defend our, to help improve our immune system, one of which is Immune Super Boost by Healthy Cell. It's not a bunch of pills. It's a travel-ready gel pack designed to boost your immune system and help your body do what it's designed to do, defend itself against disease. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. All you have to do is go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you get 20% off. So try the Immune Super Boost, try any of their products. Just make sure when you go to check out, use the code OUTLOUD to get your 20% off that first order.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And today we're discussing, well, why they keep coming for our guns. And by extension, the importance of the Second Amendment. Why that right to keep and bear arms is considered not infringible. Shall not be infringed. Now, we've talked about Senator Schumer and his attempt to create a national interstate illegal gun task force, because we got to go after the illegal guns, not the people committing the crimes. No, we got to go after the guns. We've talked about some of the, not just what government's doing, but what society is doing. We talked about how in a Rasmussen survey, the country seems evenly divided on whether or not there should be a national gun registry, even though a third of those who believe we should have a national gun registry acknowledge that that would lead toward to a confiscation of all guns. So we talked about the importance of an armed citizenry, how it makes us different than so many other countries in the world because we can defend ourselves. That the idea that we should not be trusted with arms to defend ourselves really says a lot about what they think of the American people. But the very idea that we shouldn't be allowed to defend ourselves, whether that be against a mugger or the federal government, we have a right to defend ourselves with the best tools possible. And that includes arms, not just firearms, not just handguns, rifles, shotguns, but swords, cannons, anything that is defined as an arm. Well, how do you define an arm? Well, if I go back to Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary, I chose that dictionary because he was around in the time that the framers were drafting the Constitution. He was asked to edit the Federalist Papers. And he says, arms are weapons of offense or armor for defense and protection of the body. So another place he goes farther down and says, in law, arms are anything which a man takes in his hand in anger to strike or assault another, so that we can protect ourselves. So we are not dependent on others for our own protection. Again, whether it be from a criminal or from the criminal acts of government. But there are responsibilities to being a gun owner. I've been around guns my entire life. I was taught how to safely handle a firearm as a child by my father. But there are responsibilities of being a gun owner, and there are responsibilities that government has in recognizing that the people may be armed. And one classic example is this idea of a no-knock raid. Now, the idea that government can enter your property with a warrant, but without warning, is extremely dangerous. No-knock raids were supposed to be restricted to only the most serious of circumstances, where the person being served the warrant has a known history of violent behavior and attacks against law enforcement, to the point where giving them a heads up that law enforcement is outside is so dangerous that the police, they can't do it. That was the theory behind a no-knock raid. But to me, there's another problem that comes with that. And that is, I've been told by people in the law enforcement community, and if I'm wrong, please let me know. But when law enforcement trains their keyword for a threat is often gun. That the mere presence of a gun is sufficient cause for an officer to draw their weapon and potentially use lethal force. Now, I found this article talking about a raid, a no-knock raid, in Hennepin County, Minnesota. According to the report, this came from, I found it on Bearing Arms. I don't know where they got that from. But it says, after police entered the apartment, officers quickly identified a man inside. Body camera footage shows. Hands, 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 one officer yelled, while others said, get on the blank ground. As they're making their way toward the back of the couch, where a man is seen wrapped in a blanket at 6:48 a.m., according to the footage. Now, one officer kicks the back of the couch, appearing to wake up the man who looks to see the officers all around him. Now, I just want you to stop for a second. Imagine you're that man. You are sound asleep on your couch, assuming on your couch in your home, and all of a sudden your couch gets kicked and you're surrounded by armed people pointing guns at you. Again, you're just waking up. Do you know they're law enforcement? Continuing reading from the article. He begins to try and stand up, still wrapped in blankets, and is seen holding a gun. Three gunshots are then heard from officers. Now, this is the concern I have. Was the mere possession of a firearm an imminent threat of death or serious bodily harm to the officers? You see, that's the standard that most people are held to in using lethal force. There must be an imminent threat of death or serious bodily harm. Was there one? I don't know. So I don't know who this person is. I don't know if this person had a history of violence against law enforcement. I don't know. All we know, apparently from the body cam footage, is that he was awakened by armed people in his house and he got up holding a gun. Now, I want to give the officers the benefit of some doubt. If you're executing a no-knock warrant, you are in a high-stress situation. The reason it's no-knock is supposed to be because simply entering the premises is a dangerous thing. It's a potentially life-threatening move, and you know that's why you don't announce you don't have to announce yourself first. So the officers had to make a split-second decision. But we also have to understand that this is America. And we are allowed to own and possess firearms. In fact, that right to protect ourselves, that right to own and possess firearms is enshrined in the Second Amendment, says it shall not be infringed. So law enforcement, when they're executing warrants, are going to encounter people with firearms. If the sight of a firearm is enough to trigger an officer to fire, we have a much bigger problem. Now, the article went on to talk about no-knock warrants and how this could have been done differently. But what I want to talk about is not simply the no-knock warrant, but the assumption apparently being put into the heads of not only officers, but many citizens, is that an armed citizen is inherently dangerous. Now, most of you probably know, I was born and raised, spent most of my life in the state of New York. In the state of New York, it is a lot of work to get a carry permit. You go through multiple background checks, lots of stuff. I had a carry permit. But in New York, not only would me showing a handgun be considered a violent threat, but even being able to see it pressed against my clothes was called printing. right? So if I had it concealed, but the way I was carrying it, you could see the outline on my clothes. In New York State, is considered a threat. It's actually a felony, if memory serves, to have your firearm seen in public, whether you actually see it or you just, again, see an imprint of it. It's this idea that seeing a firearm is a threat, and that really shouldn't be the place. Now, compare that to where I live now in Tennessee. In Tennessee, I can walk around with a gun on my hip. In fact, now in Tennessee, I don't even need a permit to walk around with a gun on my hip. And I remember taking a class at a gun range down here, and we all went out to lunch. And to me, it was the oddest thing to watch the instructor. We got into a car, we drove to a restaurant, we got out, we sat down, we had a meal. He was open carrying the entire time. It was a different mindset. The idea that seeing a firearm is not a threat. Now, I've had a couple of other situations that I want to describe because, and trust me, they're coming to a point. One is I have a gentleman who wants to hunt on my land. He's done it before. We have rules, all that stuff. And one day he showed up and he had a little revolver in his pocket, and the grip was sticking out, so I could see he was carrying. I didn't care. I wasn't offended. I was carrying at the time too. And we were discussing things as, you know, you come over, you talk for a while, right? You don't just, hey, how you doing, and leave. You're talking for a while. And the topic came up and he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I don't mind. If I'd have minded, I'd have told you. But the mere sight of a firearm doesn't scare me. But there was a time when I had the FBI come to my door. Now, they were here to serve a subpoena. They had called me beforehand. They had set up a time to do this. It was a subpoena for me to testify in a case. I knew they were coming. There was no surprise when two gentlemen in a black SUV show up at my door armed. Now, if I had not been warned, I'd have been a bit suspicious. I would have been much more at the ready, and it probably would have shown. But since they warned me, this is good, everything's fine. The one thing I did do was keep my back to the door because I was armed. And there's no reason why. I consciously stood in a way that they would not see where I was carrying my firearm. Did I expect them to suddenly draw down on me if they saw a gun? Probably not. But knowing that many law enforcement in this country are trained to treat the presence of a firearm in a non-law enforcement person's possession as an imminent threat, I didn't want to open it up. I didn't want the possibility. Which brings me to the no-knock raid. I've never been the subject of a no-knock raid. But I've seen reports not only of no-knock raids, but no-knock raids where the officers went to the wrong address. They went to the wrong location. Now, granted, in the vast majority of the times when no-knock raids are issued, I will give the benefit of the doubt that you're dealing with a serious bad actor and it is an imminent threat. The simple announcement that police are at the door would lead to an imminent threat. I grant that. But knowing that people are human, that they make mistakes, there has to be training to understand you're going to encounter innocent, armed people. I can't imagine sitting in my chair in my living room or getting awakened in the middle of the night by a door being kicked in and having to instantly deal with that situation. Also being aware that criminals lie. Simply because someone announces that they are police doesn't mean they're police. I've seen multiple reports of people who, someone came to the door, claimed to be the police. They opened the door, and it was a home invasion. There's a responsibility to being a gun owner, but there's also a responsibility on government agents to recognize that citizens can own arms, citizens can carry arms, and citizens can defend themselves against unlawful arrest. There's a case out of the Supreme Court called John Bad Elk versus United States. In this situation, three South Dakota policemen attempted to execute an illegal warrant against John Bad Elk. In defending himself against this illegal arrest, he actually shot and killed one of the officers, for which he was arrested and on appeal ended up all the way to the Supreme Court. And in this case, they noted that, listen, this was an illegal attempted arrest. The officers in charge, the officers committing it, were obviously an imminent threat. Therefore, it was legitimate for John Bad Elk to defend himself. I'm doing most of this from memory. So now imagine you're in that situation, only it's not, you are awakened on the couch or out of bed. You see armed men pointing their guns at you. What's your first reaction? Is it not the responsibility of the police, A, to minimize the chance of bloodshed by minimizing the use of no-knock raids, by allowing the person who is to be seized to be aware that it's the police, to be aware that it's actually the police, not someone pretending to be the police, and that they have a legitimate warrant? And in situations where that's not appropriate, where the danger to the officer is such that they must allow for the possibility they could be wrong. You see, the gentleman in Hennepin County didn't need to die. He died because the officers made a split-second decision. They put the man in a extremely difficult situation, awakened from sleep, surrounded by armed people, pointing guns at him. What was he to do? And they don't even report that he got up and pointed the gun at him. They saw the gun and they fired. And again, I don't know all the details of the case. I haven't dug into this case, but to me, there's a requirement that needs to be considered. See, in an attempt to keep officers safe, we must recognize they have a duty to keep the public safe. We can't allow officer safety to supersede the safety of innocent bystanders. And until they have identified who the person is, they have to assume that he or she is innocent. Simply standing up and seeing a gun or having a gun in your hand doesn't make the person guilty of anything. Until they identify him as a threat, or he actually points the gun at the officers, he's not an imminent threat. Now, granted, we're talking fractions of a second. I don't want to make this sound like they had the time to think this out. This is why training is so important. This is why, if I'm correct, and most officers train to the word gun, that is so dangerous. Gun should not mean I have the power to shoot back. Gun should be the person's armed, watch it. And I don't know, I don't know that I've got a good answer, a good solution, but it's certainly something we have to be aware of both as citizens and law enforcement officers. So let me bring this back around. Why are there those who want to take away our guns? Why are there people that are so afraid that we the people have guns? Well, I think I've already made the certain points, right? There are those who are just, they have what's referred to as hoplophobia. They have an irrational fear of guns. I know people that, you know, the mere sight of a firearm is enough to scare them to death. I know other people for whom, you know, like I said, the public visibility, seeing a firearm in public is panic making. But that comes from ignorance, and it comes from this training that we have instituted in our in American society, that guns in private hands are bad, that they're dangerous, they are the exception, not the rule. Which is really funny, because if you look at most of American history, and I mean most, the private ownership of firearms was not only not unique, it was the not having a firearm was the exception, not the rule. But there are those who want to take away guns. Now, I agree. I would like to see less violence, not just gun violence. I'd like to see less violence. But I believe it was Albert Einstein who said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is a definition of insanity. So doing the same thing we've done, spending billions of dollars to track down illegal guns and ignoring the people who are actually committing the crimes, doesn't work. Just take a look at some of our largest cities. Take a look at some of the cities with the most restrictive handgun laws and restrictive gun laws, period. And what do you find? They have the most instances of violent crime, especially gun involving firearms. See, the problem isn't the gun, but the person wielding the gun. And until we deal with that, guns don't make a difference. Just look at the recent push towards red flag laws and this infantile attempt to say, somebody without due process can simply accuse a person of being a danger and have their guns taken away, and they are guilty until proven innocent. And that if this person is a danger, well, the only danger they could possibly pose is with a gun, not a knife, not a baseball bat, not a crowbar, not a motor vehicle. Nope, just the guns. I think what we're dealing with are blinders. You know, the things they put on horses so they will only look ahead. They don't get distracted by what's going on around them. There are those in society that have blinders on to everything except it's the gun. They're afraid of citizens having guns. They're afraid of unregistered guns. They're afraid of the, ooh, scary ghost guns, right? The ones people assemble at home. They're afraid of evil, scary black assault weapons. There is no such thing. That's a made-up term. And I see this infecting not only people who are hoplophobic, but people who are generally not afraid of guns. But they've gotten this thing into their head. Why does someone, how many times I've been asked, why does someone need an AR-15? Why does somebody need a 30-round magazine? Why? That's not the way rights work. You don't get the chance to exercise a right because you've got a reason everybody agrees with. So when people are coming to take away our guns, they are trying to take away one of the greatest bulwarks we have for freedom in this country. The fact that government doesn't have the exclusive use of power. That they have an almost perfect monopoly on power. But it's not a perfect monopoly. Because we the people can still stand up and say, no, that's too far. We won't let you. And we even have the tools to help defend ourselves should you come and attempt to take our rights or otherwise incarcerate us or take away our liberties in an illegal or unconstitutional manner. Now, I'm not saying everybody should have guns. I know a lot of people who, I don't think they're prepared to have a gun. I don't think they have the mindset that is to be able to operate a firearm safely. Or they don't have the mental attitude to use one appropriately. Now these are situations that can be rectified through education, but no, I'm not saying everybody should be armed. But I'm saying if you're unarmed, you should be thanking your neighbor if they're willing to help defend you and your family. We have a country because only 3% of the people were willing to fight for the rights of everyone. In many cases, I believe governments are held in check by the fear of just how many Americans would be willing to arm themselves and stand against the tyranny that comes every day out of Washington and out of our state capitals. So whether you want to be the one carrying the firearm or not, ask yourself, if you want to get rid of somebody else's guns, why? How are they a threat to you? Unless and until it's actually pointed in your direction. Perhaps, just perhaps, if we trained our society, if we spend more time educating our society into how beneficial the owning and proper operation of firearms are to the safety of the people, there'd be less people out there trying to take our guns. Let me remind you that America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and now you can hear the podcast on those apps as well. So join us next time to share the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Paid bills, stay out of jail.